Hey, listeners, it's Absalom Shakur. Thanks for listening to this podcast. And just as a reminder, this podcast is listener-supported, okay? Though we want sponsors, we have none now. And if you're really enjoying Theus Secularium, the Hypocrite, do consider supporting us by visiting our web store, where you'll find T-shirts, canvas, tote bags, cup koozies. These are just all ways of showing your love and support for Theus Secularium, the Hypocrite podcast. So check out our website today at www.theussecularium.com. Thanks a lot and have a great day. And enjoy the podcast. Okay, today I want to talk a little bit about Islam. So I guess today's podcast is more of an apologetic approach today. And what we're approaching is the credibility of Muhammad. Okay? The credibility of Muhammad's statement of what occurred to him supernaturally. Okay? I guess first off, a little bit of insight into Muhammad as a person. He was born, if I'm not mistaken, he was born around 570, around 570 AD on our side, and he died June 8th, 1630 AD. All right. So he was looked at as, in Islam, as the final prophet in all of the main branches of Islam. He's known for, Muhammad unified Arabia into a single Muslim body with the Quran, you know, using the Quran as a springboard in his teachings as well to unify Arabia as a whole, all right? According to sources, from 583 to 609, Muhammad lived as a merchant. And from 609 to 632, he led as a religious leader. Now, 609 was supposed to be the date that Muhammad entered into a cave and there received his revelation, a revelation from the angel Gabriel, according to Muhammad. Now, the mountain cave where he was they call it Hira or Hira, right? I guess he used to, Muhammad went there to pray, you know, periodically or frequently, he would go there to pray. And during one of those praying sessions in the cave, he received a message from the angel Gabriel. And 3 years later, in 610, Muhammad began to preach these messages that he claimed to receive from the angel, from the messenger. All right. Okay, so these accounts are called hadiths, or Muhammad, the sahanas and the hadiths. Okay, so his revelations themselves are called ayahs. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. I'm not a student in Arabic, although I probably should be. Okay. Oh, and anyhow, ayah means is a sign of God, which Muhammad reported seeing until his death. Right now, personally, my problem with Muhammad's story is twofold. First is I have a problem with it biblically, with Muhammad's claim biblically, and have a non-biblical, a secular issue with the whole, with the, with the, with the issue with Muhammad. So let's see here. We're going to find Paul here in the New Testament, in the book of Galatians. So now, mind you, Paul wrote to the Galatians concerning some things. I guess they were having some troubles with the Judaizers, and they were trying to compel them to continue to keep the law in the ritual and the ceremonial laws of Moses, which also included circumcision, right? So they were telling them that, hey, man, you can follow Yeshua if you want, and that's fine with us, but you can't negate the law of Moses. And that was the issue that Paul had. So Paul wrote concerning that, but he also addressed other issues as well. And one of them beginning in Galatians chapter 1, verse 6, which reads, I marvel that you are turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another, but there are some who trouble you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ. Now, verse 8 and verse 9 are where we are. This is what we're looking at here. But even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. First here, as we have said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. Or no, King James, it's the anathema. Anathema just seems to sound a lot better to me for some reason. For do I now persuade men or God, or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. All right. So just a little a review here on Hebrew grammatics. Okay. Now in English, when we want to highlight something, we have several devices. For one, we can use italics, or we can use bold, or nowadays we can even use coloring, all right? Or the most common, which is, you know, just drawing a line under a text to highlight that portion of the text. So the Hebrews always also have highlighting devices, and what it is repetition. Okay, in the New Testament, you hear Jesus saying things like, verily, verily, I say unto you. Or in Revelations, you hear the woes, one woe and two woes. Okay, well, when you wanted to highlight something in the Hebrew text, you would just say it by repetition. Jesus would say, verily, verily, I say unto you. Now, verily means to listen up now and have something to say. Okay, so verily, verily means listen up now and listen closely. I have something important to say. Now, verily, verily, verily means I need your full, undivided attention. What I have to tell you now could be a matter of life and death. Okay? So, here we have Paul, verse 8. I'll repeat it again, but if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. Paul repeats it again, as we have said before. So now, and I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. So Paul repeated this thing, so it was it's showing that it is very important to the reader or the hearer of this, okay? So my point here is that I use the sex is because Paul said, even if we or an angel from heaven, so that's Muhammad's claim. Now, this was written in the first century A.D., approximately 609 years before Muhammad began his public ministry. Okay, so Paul wrote this under the guidance and the influence of the Holy Spirit. So there was knowledge here saying that the possibility of people being deceived by angelic beings was going to occur. All right. So Paul was preparing us for it here. Now, Muhammad is not the only person that made such a claim as well, that became very popular on the world religious stage. Joseph Smith is also a proponent of those who were in the wilderness or in the woods somewhere, and an angel appeared to them and brought them a different gospel. Okay, in addition to the gospel. Or in some believe that they're just entirely, totally different gospels. Which is true, because if it's not about Jesus Christ, then it's not the gospel, right? Anyhow, so that's the issue. Now, Muhammad goes and he sees the angel Gabriel. So, biblically, this is how I challenge what occurred with Muhammad, okay? So now, Now, secularly, I believe that Muhammad was, all right, let me just put it this way. Let's just have a little more background here. I'm not trying to be all over the place, but Muhammad lived approximately 700 miles from the city of Jerusalem, right? So along this, in this distance, there were trade routes, okay? And Muhammad was a merchant. So being a merchant, Muhammad probably would have known the trade routes. Being a merchant, Muhammad would have come in contact with so many different items, things, just like a pawn shop almost, right? A bunch of miscellaneous items and things being traded. Now, in this area as well, there were, during this time period, we had a huge flush of what they call pseudepigraphal gospels. These were gospels or gospel accounts or books that we didn't include in the scripture, that the Council of Nicaea saw fit not to include in the scriptures for various reasons. Like we have the Shepherd of Hermas, we have the Apocalypse of Peter, the Book of Thomas, and, you know, a bunch of gospel, Gnostic gospels, things that we didn't include. Like, say, for instance, the Book of Thomas. We know that Thomas didn't write this book because there's a conversation between him and Jesus where they discuss how women are going to enter into heaven by being converted into men, things like that. You know, so we know that the Apostle Thomas would have never said anything so absurd. But what I believe is that because these pseudepigraphal gospels or Gnostic gospels were in circulation during that time, okay, I believe personally that Muhammad ran into one of those books, one of those pseudepigraphal gospels, and that book was the Quran, okay? He read it, he understood it. I don't believe that Muhammad was an illiterate man, okay? I don't believe that he was completely illiterate. He may have been illiterate in certain things and possessed certain ignorances, but not a complete and total fool. He was a merchant, okay? But anyhow, let's see here. All right. Just one moment here. Just want to pull some resources. We struggle for accuracy here. Atheist, secularium, the hypocrite. All right. So now, I believe that Muhammad ran into that source, that book, the Quran. Okay, and he didn't receive the revelation the way that he said that he did receive it. All right. And another problem that I have with that is. In Orthodox Christianity, we support and we believe in what we call the immutability of God, the unchangingness of God, the unwillingness of God's nature to even consider the ability to change. Okay? Now, one thing that we can guarantee in our existence, in our reality, one constant, one measurable constant, and an absolute constant is change. Things are always changing, no matter what. But that's not true of God. God is permanent. God is absolute. Okay? He is permanent. He is absolute. He is immutable. He can't change. Even if he ever had some frivolous idea to change. No. He is who he is. He will be who he will be. All right? So now, but this is not what the Quran supports. The Quran teaches that Muhammad is the final prophet, and the Quran is the height of all monotheistic authority. Okay? The problem with that is that there's only one Quran. Okay? Now, they don't see that as a problem. They see it as a plus, but not in Orthodox scholarship. You know, no unbiased scholar would agree, you know, that having one copy of a book, a single book, gives it ultimate authority. Let me give you an example of the Bible. The Bible itself, there is what, I think like 24,000 extant copies of the scriptures, of the New Testament scriptures. 19,000 of those copies are in Syriac, Armenian, and different languages, and with varying language, all right? Now, because there are varying texts and some of the language varies there, but the overall idea, the overall scope, and the message of redemptive history is the same, okay? Now, the reason why it's a good thing to have over 24,000 extant copies of the New Testament is this. When we come to passages of scripture that are ambiguous or really not clear, okay, we have the ability to go to another source or another text, whether it be in Armenian or whatever the language is, we can go to another text to compare these things. So say, for instance, the passage in question is Galatians 6. So it may say, if it's worded one way in one text and worded another in a different text from a different language, right? And there's a discrepancy there. We can gather and say in total, we have, 50 fragments of the book of Galatians from this passage of verse 1-6. We can take all of those fragments, compare exactly what's being said in each of them, and from there, be able to draw a pristine conclusion. Now, because there's only one Quran, there's no standard to compare it to for discrepancies. The only thing that you can compare, the only books you can compare the Quran to is the books that it stole its information from, which are the Hebrew text. Okay? My other problem with Muhammad is my main problem is Muhammad's credibility. In the Old Testament scriptures, we find that we find a law that stipulates a man as a single witness is not a credible witness, not just a person. As a credible witness does not exist in a singular form. It says that it is required that the witness or two of more be established. Okay? Now, this wasn't only the law of the land in Jerusalem, but also the surrounding areas. It was like almost a common law, so to speak. All right? So, and it makes sense, though. It makes sense because not having the credibility of one person to, you know, can, you know, destroy lives, So anyhow, the Pharisees had also brought this claim to upon Yeshua. It says that you're your own witness. You're the only witness. Your witness, you're not a credible witness. And Yeshua broke it down for him and told him, "Say, no, I'm not the only witness. My Father and the Spirit are also witnesses of me." So in totality, that's three witnesses. So Muhammad is his own witness. Right? Now, this makes him an incredible witness. Had there been someone there, you know, to help Muhammad out a little bit or something, I don't know. But why should he, out of all people, if no one else can be considered a credible witness without the accompaniment of others or other? Why should Muhammad slip through this loophole as well? Now, it's clear to me that that the Quran is a book of Christian influence or Gnostic influence. I mean, all one has to do is read a couple of Gnostic Gospels, then read the Quran, okay? But I think that most of the other Gnostic Gospels are a lot well put together than the Quran. It's not something that's very informative, okay? It's not very informative on man's relationship with God and what man's life will be like, what is after the physical is done away with, after we leave this life, what's next? The only information that the Quran gives us is that we'll have virgins and wine to drink in paradise. And another problem with the Quran, before I end this podcast, is that it doesn't solve the more deeper problems that the human spirit cry out for, so to speak. Like, it doesn't answer the deeper problems or the deeper questions that humans have. Like, you know, what is my purpose? You know, where do I fit in here? Right? What you are like. They don't have a description of Allah. They don't have a description of, or not a description. You're not able to have a personal relationship with Allah. Okay? So, like I said, the Quran doesn't answer some of the deeper things that plague the human spirit, you know? It really just doesn't get down to the heart of things. It doesn't give you an etymology of anything that's necessary for proceeding forward in your human experience in the physical and whatever experiences that you may incur in the non-corporeal. This is Absalom Shakur. I do thank you for tuning in today with us at Theus Secularium, The Hypocrite. Just a small recap on today's episode. It's about the credibility of Muhammad as a prophet. Me personally, I don't wish to call Muhammad or address him as a prophet, because in order to be a prophet, you need to prophesy about something. Okay? Now, I've never read anything in the Quran as many times as I had the Quran is where Muhammad made a prophecy, or even in any of the other compositions about Muhammad, right? Now, when I've asked every I-man that I've spoken to, debated with, or whatever, to show me a prophecy in the Quran, it's never happened. I've even went so far as to say, if you can show me a valid prophecy in the Quran, whether it's come to pass or it's going to come to pass, show it to me in the Quran, and I'll never read my Bible again. You show me why the Quran should be regarded as a holy, or no, not even, let's not say holy. That just means separate, okay? A spiritual book. If anyone, this is a challenge. If anyone can show me why the Quran should be regarded as a spiritual book, I'll never read the Bible again. Hello, everyone. And again, thank you for joining us today at Theist Secularium, The Hypocrite, a podcast. A small recap. Today, we talked about the credibility of Muhammad and the fact that he is his own witness when the requirement is for there to be a witness of two or more. The law for a witness of two or more is found in the Old Testament scriptures. But why not use this as an example, seeing that the Quran is nothing but a book that has characters and narratives, all of a biblical, or let's just say a Hebrew nature. All right. So, in closing, this is listener-supported radio. We don't have sponsors at this time. So we do depend on you guys for your support. And you can do that by going to our website, www.theistsecularium.com. All right? And we do thank you for your support. And yes, do help us to continue to provide you with quality theological information. And again, this is Absalom Shakur. Thanks for joining me.